This week's episode is brought to you by Imagine Learning. Traverse is a social studies curriculum from Imagine Learning that brings the past to life through inquiry-based tasks. Developed in collaboration with renowned educators Kathy Swan and Sam Weinberg, it engages students with scenarios and sources to debate and form their own conclusions, helping them connect learning to real-world societal issues. Check out the Q&A with Kathy at the Answer site, in which she talks about connections between inquiry-based learning and the concept of high-quality instructional materials. Find out more at imaginelearning.com/traverse-edsurge. That's imaginelearning.com/traverse-edsurge. Hello and welcome to the EdSurge podcast, where every week we look at the future of learning. I'm Jeff Young. I'm an editor and a reporter here at EdSurge. We are a national nonprofit newsroom covering innovation in education. If you put on a VR headset and you're connected to the internet, you can enter the virtual campus of South Dakota State University. You could see campus landmarks like the Coughlin Campanile Bell Tower. You can walk past the Berg Agricultural Building or see prominent features of other academic buildings like a large theater-style lecture hall or an anatomy lab. South Dakota State calls this virtual mock-up of its campus a digital twin, and it is serving as a testing ground for moving education to the metaverse. The university isn't alone in putting up a metaverse campus. At least 10 colleges made similar digital copies of their buildings and grounds so that students and professors can try them out. And they had some help with some funding from the tech giant Meta. You might remember that talk of the metaverse was just about everywhere 2 years ago. Facebook had only recently rebranded its company name as Meta to signal its giant bet on immersive VR. And think tanks, including the Brookings Institution, were issuing big reports on how to best harness VR spaces for education. These days, all that buzz has kind of gone quiet. But that doesn't mean that educators at both schools and colleges haven't been experimenting with teaching in the metaverse. Many educators are trying out VR headsets, and it's worth noting that new and sleeker gear keeps coming out. And students and instructors have been teaching and learning in digital twin campuses, including that one at South Dakota State. And interestingly, they're finding out that some subjects haven't worked as well as leaders thought, while experiments in other disciplines have worked better than expected. In today's episode, we're getting a progress report on the metaverse in education. To do that, I invited back two guests who we had on the show 2 years ago at the peak of this metaverse hype. Greg Heiberger, Associate Dean for Academics and Student Success at South Dakota State University, and Kathy Hirsch-Pasek, a professor of psychology at Temple University and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. It's worth noting that just this week, as I finished putting this episode together, I see Meta announced it plans to release a new education-focused product for its VR headset later this year. So I'm sure we are going to still see announcements and maybe more hype in the future. I started by asking Greg Heiberger of South Dakota State what they have learned from their campus in the metaverse.
That it really was the spark to ignite lots of other departments and programs' interests. So we started off with leveraging the digital twin campus to say, we're going to teach chemistry there. We're going to build out content. We're going to teach anatomy there. We're going to utilize the anatomy models that they had built. And really, you know, through that development, we really just found that it was so much work. And on the technical side, our science faculty just weren't kind of getting what they wanted. And so we pivoted and leveraged those environments, that digital twin, to some of our partners on campus in education and in architecture. And those just tended to be a better fit. And so when we think about future high school teachers, they now had an opportunity, low cost, no cost to their department, to them, to build a lesson plan in VR, test it with their classmates, have those kinds of experiences. Same thing with architecture. I mean, architecture's got a long history of working in 3D modeling and 3D space, but they didn't have enough headsets. They didn't have enough space. And so, you know, we've or enough resources to be able to do some of those things. So as we thought about it, I mean, I'm in a college of natural sciences. We're the ones who invested in that digital twin. We really thought that it was going to be the right fit, and it really wasn't. And that's okay. And again, you know, it was probably painful at the time to be like, we invested this time in these resources, but in terms of an institution, our education program probably would have taken a few more years to be able to have the resources to have student teachers build lesson plans, or the architecture program would have had a couple of headsets and now they have 20 to be able to demo. I think this spring what they're working on is that they've got a community, like a historic downtown that they're rebuilding a park or designing some common space for. They're going to be able to take these headsets and have community members put them on and experience the 3D renderings that they've created. So again, not exactly probably how Victory XR envisioned, you know, this very linear kind of process, but at the same time, again, I think it gave us kind of that spark to move that forward. The other thing that kind of spun out of that Metaversity digital twin component is we have a partner institution in West Africa that had a lot of interest in wanting to explore this space. But again, their access to technology, their access to hardware and software was just really limited. And so we were able to kind of leverage that partnership with Victory XR to say, hey, let's get these guys 10 headsets. And then essentially my staff, the VR coordinator that we created and hired at SDSU because of the Metaversity initiative, is a support person for them in Ghana. And they've been doing weekly trainings, getting their IT staff up to speed so that they can deliver some professional development to their faculty. And when I was in Ghana last May, I gave a talk to some of their faculty at a seminar, and they just had a lot of interest. They've got nurses that they're training, physicians that they're training, but they don't have a cadaver program. They don't have hands-on experiences outside of seeing patients, kind of that preclinical experience. And so this, they really feel like has a lot of value there. Now, they've also kind of branched off into architecture and education and some of these other spaces because they were those low-hanging fruit, those areas where the dean of international programs at this university was an architect, so he had a little interest, but they also just really saw the value add in those very specific academic programs. So that's a little bit of where that's gone.
So one of the things that I'm really interested in, which, because I think this is a typical, like an early adopter thing that happens, is that you went in and you kind of imagined it for science education, if I heard you right. And can you kind of walk through, because I think this will help other people, like, what is there, not to, you know, call out anybody, but is there a class that like tried it and it just wasn't quite right, or and why? Like, what is the part that was the idea and it didn't quite work there in science?
I think that we had some early adopters that really thought that they could build out, you know, the simulations that we saw grow during COVID, build them out in 3D and be able to have that laboratory experience, right? So when you think about a lot of the sim software that came out during COVID, it was, you know, linear in one respect, but there was at least data that came out of it, or there was, you know, an experiment that you got to visualize. And so, you know, we started building that, and our chemistry faculty started building that, and spent a bunch of time and energy and really just found out, like, there's an app out there called Nanome that we could use, and had the database and that we could push forward with that. And I would say the same thing for anatomy. It was, okay, there was some basic anatomy content built, but it wasn't to the level that we needed for our clinical pharmacy program or for our nursing program or whatever. It was a little bit more at the entry level college or even upper division high school. So we just really found that the digital twin didn't fit in that space. Now, again, where it fits, I think, was when we handed it off to education, their ability to just explore and do whatever they want, right? They've got this amazing library in Victory XR of all of these assets. And so you can see those teachers just being able to see a future, a curriculum, a lesson plan, a learning outcome. And I think we just struggled with the technical aspect on some of the sciences. Now, that doesn't mean I don't want to be a naysayer on the sciences. I think it was our use case. We were looking at organic chemistry. We were looking at cadaver-based anatomy. But, you know, we didn't find that specifically here that it was the right fit.
Yeah, no, and I think that's really interesting because it does get at one of the things that we've mentioned in our coverage of ER, which is the material, like the curriculum and the, you know, every curriculum is hard to build and every, you know, any, whether it's technology or not. But with VR, it feels like there's this added level of production value you have to get to and technical knowledge to pull that off. And so it's not a, it sounds like what I'm hearing is it's not a medium where the professor can just like spin up their own thing, especially for an advanced course.
So I would agree, but at the same time, I was kind of proven wrong with that perception. So we went to Arizona State last fall, took 20 faculty and explored and were able to see what was happening there. And it was overwhelming. I mean, it's amazing what they're doing there, but I mean, they're essentially at Hollywood production level. They're at that type of an investment as well. And so we left that experience a little bit deflated in the sense of like, we can't do what Arizona State does. We can't build out this entire biology curriculum. But what's happened in the last 9 months on my campus is one of our instructors pulled in a computer science student, an interior design student, a biology student, formed a team, and they got a grant from Macmillan and some internal funding and have built essentially kind of a magic school bus mammalian cell experience. And so I agree with you. Yes, the majority of faculty and I mean, my chemistry or my anatomy faculty couldn't do it. They had a few hours a week. This faculty who's leading the VR cell is using this also for her PhD project, right? And so there's kind of all of those things that coalesced in that we found funding, we found an external funder, we found students who were going to do it. And I mean, in 6 months, essentially, had built out a rough version. And I think in the next 2 months, we'll have a really a kind of public-facing version of a VR cell that one is that magic school bus. Like I said, I mean, it's on rails. You go through, you have this experience, you answer questions, but also has some kind of live interoperability that you can interact and touch and hold and do your own thing. But also that it's branded SDSU. That was another huge push for us is anybody can go buy the app on the App Store, right? But what is it that we're doing in here? We're using microscope images from our scientists. We've built out a digital twin of the lab. So yeah, they get that kind of branding, but our faculty built it and our students are the ones who are on the team. And so coming back to your comment, I completely agree. That was exactly the barrier we hit, but I was also just, you know, really pleasantly surprised to see that, we can't do the thing that Dreamscapes and ASU is doing, but we can do the thing that fits for us and that we know are some concerns for our intro bio students. You know, they've all since eighth grade had to label parts of the cell or know what the powerhouse of the cell is, but like now they're going to touch it and they're going to talk about how it interacts and they're going to be doing some things they just couldn't do in the 2D space or previous. So
it's interesting that, you know, Metaverse there for a minute, year and a half ago was like everywhere and, you know, Meta had just rebranded and there was a lot of, buzz. That is not the buzz I hear these days. It's all about generative AI. So I guess where is the Metaverse? Where do you see like the Metaverse now compared to then, both in education and broadly?
It was last Thanksgiving. We went to Meta's headquarters in Hudson Yards in New York City, and that was like a week or two before they gave up that lease, right? Before they walked away, and they were in the middle of kind of pulling back their investment. And so, I mean, we were physically there and also just connected to some folks at Meta. I mean, I think it was a real business decision, and it was, you know, the reality of where they were at in terms of their market value and what kind of cash they had on hand. All of that being said, I think for us in education, it's always been what problem does this actually solve, right? We're not a hammer trying to find the nail. we really have issues in online education, in replicating what we know are really important hands-on experiences or 3D interactive experiences. So I think for me, I still have hope in that space. I'm actually okay that, you know, a lot of the buzz is going somewhere else, because I think it helps us to focus not on the shiny object, not on the newest software, hardware, game, whatever kind of app, but that we can really, you know, focus on what matters to us. And now what's heartbreaking is there was money flowing from Meta into education directly. That money is essential. I mean, there's still a tap there, but man, that thing has been pretty well closed. And that I think is tough. But at the same time, I mean, just throwing money at a problem doesn't solve it. And I think you do sometimes then just get flashy things that make for good commercials, and that's not where we're at, right? I mean, our VR cell project is not about a flashy commercial. It's about what is this going to do for the intro bio students and their motivation and their excitement about science and their understanding of cell structure and function. That's what we care about. And if we find out it doesn't work, we'll go somewhere else and do something else. But it's not, yeah. I'm okay that some of that energy has been redirected. But I do still think that there's hope there. It's just probably going to be a slower evolution than it might have been if there was lots of money making the wheels turn.
After the break, we talk about some other reasons why schools and colleges are trying out the metaverse, and what is emerging as the key benefit of this approach. Stay with us. How do you get students to understand the connections between people and events in the past and things they see going on around them right now? Imagine Learning social studies curriculum, Traverse, takes historical and social concepts and makes them truly relevant and relatable to students. It grabs their attention with inquiry-based tasks that make them think, question, investigate evidence, and draw conclusions. It includes a library of more than 1,500 high-quality sources, innovative video formats, and a range of interactive digital tools to explore the past. Developed with and by teachers, Traverse hits state standards and saves on lesson prep time with all the resources needed to create memorable learning experiences. Don't miss the Q&A on the EdSurge site with Kathy Swan, who led the development of the C3 framework in social studies and also helped with the development of Traverse. In the Q&A, she links inquiry-based learning with the concept of high-quality instructional materials, or HQIM. To find out more about Traverse, visit imaginelearning.com/traverse-edsurge. That's imaginelearning.com/traverse-edsurge. Now back to the episode. Going back to this idea of like the problem, you know, focus on the problem you're trying to solve, like with the technology. I think a lot of people in education can probably like relate to that piece of it. It's because, you know, y'all are not like selling product in the way that a Meta is or a big tech firm. And so how would you state the problem? You sort of said it quickly a minute ago, but that you see after experimenting with this now for a while, that you think it is uniquely suited to have and to make it worth all the trouble and the technology and cost to have these headsets and this VR space?
Well, I think it's multidimensional. I mean, I think, you know, for us to be purists and to say the only reason we're doing it is for the learning outcome can't be the only thing we're thinking about. And what I mean by that is, you know, when we think about any new technology in the business space, in the society that we live in, we don't get a choice. We have to function on Zoom. We have to function via email. We have to live in this digital space. We need to be training our graduates to be in that space. And so visual computing, 3D, spatial computing, engaging in these environments, I think is an outcome we need to be in no matter what, whether we feel like it is better than or equal to or whatever. Now, at the same time, we have real educational issues. We need to get rigorous for us, my bias, we need to get rigorous science education into rural America. We need to get it into tribal communities. We need to get it into spaces that don't have high-speed internet still. Those types of experiences are things that we're looking at. That VR cell product is going to live offline. And that's a huge part of what we needed to do was, this isn't something that's going to be rendered in the cloud, because we need to be in that rural school that the Wi-Fi can't handle the bandwidth that we're going to need, or that we're going to need to be in that tribal community that doesn't have reliable access to the internet. So I think there's real issues around parity and experience in that space. I know that just down the road, the rich private school is going to already has a VR lab, right? That they've already got that, and that rural community doesn't. And so I think for us, we need to be in that space. But I think in terms of learning outcomes, things like preparing students for healthcare careers, preparing them for STEM careers, where we really went was thinking about something like anatomy. We have this program on our campus. It's an undergraduate cadaver program where students are dissecting. It's our feather in our cap. Not many campuses in the country can afford that, can do that, have the expertise to do that. But we also have an online nursing program. We also have students who are West River, 300, 400 miles away from us that are getting a science degree, and we can't take cadavers to them. And so we really needed to find the way forward there. And so we pivoted from the twin, digital twin, the Metaversity, to an app called Medical Holodeck, which is a 3D scanned cadaver. And we ran a random controlled trial this last fall and showed that there was no difference in the learning between VR and cadaver. Now, that was a little bit heartbreaking for my cadaver faculty, right? But it was real, right? I mean, it was real. It was a random controlled trial. We controlled for as many variables as we possibly could, and that we got to that, is also kind of inspiring, that cadavers are amazing. They're great. But that we can, get close to that, if not equal to that, or at least, statistically no different than that, would be the way to put it. And we also found something interesting that really, I think, aligns with all of the education pedagogy, but certainly what's been happening in the last 10 years around flipped classrooms. And that's that if students had VR first and then a cadaver experience, their learning increased significantly. And so this idea of utilizing it in ways that we know are aligned with past research, current research around how students learn, is also really, really important. And so we've got lots more data coming from that study around students' experience and their comfort and their confidence around science, their metacognition, their longer-term learning. But coming back to your question, which I think was, what are the problems we're trying to solve? It's those exact things. Can I feel confident that we can create a curriculum for an online learner that's going to approximate that cadaver experience? I feel like we can get there, right? Because we've selected the right tools, we've created the right content in the right ways, but also that we may be able to really lean into a push for some cadaver experience, right? Let's do all of this VR stuff first, and then let's have a weekend with cadavers rather than a week, weekly lab like we're used to, or some sort of creative solution to get towards the similar kinds of learning outcomes.
That's so interesting. Yeah, no, that's great. So what I'm hearing is this basically, instead of thinking you're going to, one or the other, it sounds like even for the cadaver program that you're proud of as an institution, that you're like, wait, actually this might change that, even though it was designed for a remote audience. Is that right?
Yeah, for sure. And so we're trying to figure out, how do we manage that? So we've got a library that's open way more than our science labs are open, and is staffed with folks who could, check stuff out or manage some of the technical piece. So we're now in the process of rolling out a lab that will be there, but will be a cadaver-based program. Now we're going to open it up and be good collaborators like we were with the Metaversity piece, and if education wants to use it or architecture, but that we roll it out saying, hey, we know you may need to study at 2 a.m. on Saturday. Cadaver lab's not open at 2 a.m. on Saturday, but the library is. And so you can stop in, check out a headset, be able to have some of these experiences, get yourself ready for the upcoming week, or review from the past content. So we're trying to be creative there, trying to be thoughtful, both in terms of resources, because we can't do all the things all the time, and that's real. So yeah, we explored VR cadavers because of the online audience, but it will have an impact for the 300 to 600 students that are taking it each semester, each year, physically on our campus with the cadavers.
Huh. So it might be a sort of like a more on-demand experience, or like those who really want to dig in or spend more time may end up with more time in this case, virtual plus face to face.
Yeah. And we've had a history of similar things. So we've done supplemental instruction, free tutoring. We also have an open lab. And we've done that in anatomy, because we know it's a lot of content. We know that they need to touch and do and see in 3D, but open lab is on Fridays. Well, if you got a job and you got to work on Fridays, or if you're commuting, or whatever those reasons are, student athletes, the ability to say, okay, well, you know, stick a VR headset in your backpack when you're traveling for baseball, and still stay on top of your content, is something we just couldn't do because Friday was the only option before. It was a physical space limitation and a human capital limitation. So
what about using the metaverse in K-12 classrooms? For that perspective, I turned to Kathy Hirsch-Pasek, who in 2022 co-authored the Brookings Institution report called A Whole New World: Education Meets the Multiverse. I started by asking Kathy how far she thinks things have moved with this metaverse since we last talked to her in 2022.
Well, the answer to your question is we haven't advanced much. But the reason we haven't advanced much is because literally all the money and all the attention that was going into the development of the metaverse went into AI.
It became the gold rush of the tech world.
It really did. And it still is.
Uh-huh.
It still is. Now, Apple has since then released its Apple Vision Pro, which is, let me tell you, a game changer.
Mm. So I take it you have experienced demoing this thing, or maybe you have one.
Oh, of course. I mean, who do you think was first in line to go demo Apple Vision Pro?
All right. That's why we called.
When I saw what it could do, I have to tell you, I was completely impressed.
Mm.
Have they used the full potential of what I hope will come into education? Not quite yet, but it's a darn good first step because it's created, I believe, a series of platforms that will be usable in education. One of the most exciting features that I was worried about when I saw VR in the beginning was that VR takes you to an alternate reality, so much so that you're no longer really interacting with human beings.
Right. You have this bulky thing on your head, in some cases bulky, but maybe it's getting smaller, but you have this thing on your head. You can't see the people around you. That was the tradition.
Exactly. And they created this process called Breakthrough so that you can actually have a conversation with another social being on the other side.
Otherwise known as the human next to you in the room.
Human next to you. We could call that human simulation.
Oh, gosh.
All right. But we're not there yet. I don't think in a classroom we can use it except to have different people view movies at different, you know, angles and then have a discussion about it. It kind of is the VR that they have is more, I would say, a presenter mode rather than an engagement mode in a very real way. And they're working on that. I mean, obviously Roblox has figured out how to do a lot of engagement and to get kids actually building platforms. So, are we there and are we using it? Not yet. Immediate leap forward, I think, with Apple Vision Pro. The goggles are still unbelievably clunky. They hurt your nose after 20 minutes. They are very expensive. Educators can't afford that. I think it's $3,500 to do an Apple Vision Pro.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And it doesn't allow for the kind of collective, interactive, social learning that I hope we'll be able to do.
So one of the things that I've read is that there aren't a lot of apps so far, or experiences or tools built that are designed for education in the Apple Vision Pro world.
But I'm not even sure that right now it would be a good thing to do it with platform as it stands.
Right. So in other words, they could see that this isn't, that isn't what it's kind of built for at the moment.
That's right. It's built for, it's built for entertainment. My dream is that it can become that. Look, when I went into the app and saw the dinosaurs coming close to me, it was amazing. I was roaming the earth at the time of the dinosaurs in a way that I had not experienced otherwise. One of the features is the ability to do a kind of 3D-ish movie so that you can recreate a birthday party that you were at. You could go visit ancient Greece. You could go visit places, but basically you'd be watching an IMAX movie. And for education, we need more. We need interactivity, and it must be social. That problem has not been solved. The second thing that has not been solved is the interactivity. Right now, we can't move things. We can move a screen around, but we can't move around the mountains in what they're showing us. We can't be the designers. We can only be the passive observers. And in real education, I think our greatest goal has to be moving away from a whole group instruction of passive learners to more active learners who have a chance to talk about it, engage with it, and have empowerment and agency. And I'm now doing a very large study with a magnificent team in education in 4 states across the US. And we're looking quite seriously at what it's going to take in 2024 and beyond to educate children for the future we live in. And it's not going to take the development of apps that are going to go onto a metaverse to help us do math, or apps that are going to help us do, you know, read a storyline. I think we need to think differently and use the capabilities of what the metaverse can offer. So it's a wonderful idea. It's starting to filter in. Certainly when we're more engaged in an experiential learning, we get more out of it.
Fair enough. And so I'm sorry, back to that effort you're working with others on, that report. Is it specifically about the metaverse, or is it more open than that? Just like what's next?
It's very, very open. We're trying to ask what's going on in education today, and is it preparing kids for the workforce of tomorrow?
Oh my gosh, what are you finding so far? Can you share?
Well, it's a little premature because we're just doing our pilot year this year, but I feel so excited because literally I'm working with the nation's best scientists, and we're also working with teachers, and we're also working with administrators, sitting in the same room, banging out what we think would make an optimal education for today. And what's very exciting is that we have seen even very big school districts ecstatic about what we're doing. And the very same principles that govern a great education when it's live will be those that will govern a great education with augmented and virtual reality. So I think we know how to do it, and we're going to test that. And I hope that we can work with designers. One more point on that. I just got back from giving a talk at Oxford University. Whole talk was on tech and education. And one of the talks was about the apps that are co-designed with scientists and how they fare in child outcomes compared to the apps that are just designed to get to the marketplace that designers think is educational, but might not be. And the outcome differences were enormous. If you do use the best science, you get the best product. Same thing is true when you look at food. When you use the best ingredients, you get better tasting food, and it's better for your body and better for your outcomes. So that's the same analogy I would use.
No, it's interesting. And when you last were on, I think one of your calls to the world to put into that, there was like, you are available and other experts in higher ed and elsewhere are ready to share your knowledge with people building the metaverse, in particular, when we were talking about that. I wonder, did that invitation get answered in the last 2 years?
But I'll tell you why I think it isn't answered. The interesting thing, by the way, is in this group that I heard from Oxford, the apps that were done with scientists were downloaded more and had more punch. So
you're still making this case to the tech developers out there to consult scientists, learning scientists.
Yes. And I get that it takes a little longer to cook a meal with fresh ingredients than it does to unwrap a package, you know, put it in the micro oven and eat it. But the difference is enormous. And right now, the app industry and some of the metaverse industry, but we're not there yet, is more into the what you can get and put in the microwave real quick because we want to get something to market, as opposed to what I call edible science. And there at Oxford was a whole other crew of people waiting to work with you all as you put these things together. The whole movement has been held up a bit by AI, and a lot of the companies are rushing there. But for many, many companies, AI is simply going to be too expensive for them to mount serious educational products. The biggies are doing it because they have the money to do it. So those who can get into the areas like the metaverse, better creation of apps, boy, do I think there's fertile ground for the picking there.
So I have to admit that this metaverse discussion is giving me a little sense of deja vu. I've been covering education for a long time, and I remember back in the early 2000s when educators were experimenting with teaching in a virtual world called Second Life. Back then, people were not wearing VR headsets, but honestly, the spaces looked a lot like the demos that I'm seeing today. If you think I'm exaggerating about feeling deja vu, let me quick play you a clip from a podcast that I did back in 2016, back when I was a reporter at the Chronicle of Higher Education, and I was describing what educators had learned from Second Life, which by then had already faded out. It looked like a video game. It was this immersive virtual world, but it was designed as a kind of visual social network. So this idea of an educational metaverse is actually really old by now, and yet it never seems to quite catch on. So I just had to ask Kathy whether maybe this just isn't an idea that's ever going to work. Well, as you'll hear, I wasn't quite that direct with my question, but I was trying to get at that idea. Because it's 2 years later in the metaverse, after a lot of hype, it's not getting as much attention these days. You mentioned that one reason is generative AI is really taking a lot of the oxygen. However, there's also some, I think, suggestion that maybe the metaverse, even if that hadn't happened, has not been delivering some of its promises, or at least as quickly. And I wonder what you would say to the critique that maybe it's proof that people didn't want the metaverse or aren't ready for it, and therefore it's not ready for education yet either at this time.
I don't believe that. I think that if we design it properly, that's like saying, gosh, my field trip didn't work, you know, and so maybe people don't want field trips. I don't believe that. And for many, many around the world, they can't possibly take the field trips that are most educational. Experiential learning is on the horizon, I believe. And we're seeing it in many other fields, in real estate, in concert going, you know, we're seeing it everywhere. Why isn't it in education? Well, it's not designed for education yet. It's not easy enough to use. It's not cheap enough. It hasn't hit the equity bar yet. It's not interactive enough. And it's not social enough. Now, I think in what I saw with Apple Vision Pro, I do believe that there were advances that could become. I see the germ of an idea there that could become more interactive, more social. And I think that's tremendously exciting. It won't solve all the problems. But gosh, if a teacher could bop in on different people and could take me on a field trip when I'm sitting in my own classroom, I don't believe that that's something people would reject.
Yeah, no, and I think to me, as we probably talked about last, I think the big thing is like, yes, I see these use cases that it really can feel immersive and give, you know, there's an aha effect that might be, you know, compelling to a lot of students. It's, to me, sometimes comes down to the, will the cost get there to make it worth that, right? Because there's all this, you know, there's not only the cost, which you mentioned, but also you know, time of setup and getting everybody geared up with these, you know, to get into the experience. And to me, it's like, when is it going to be worth all the time and money cost for it to be really a mainstream education experience?
We're down the road, down the road. You know,
do you have any guess of like how long? Cause you know, obviously it didn't happen instantly. It didn't happen as soon as people were thinking 2 years ago. Now, knowing how it's developing, do you have a guess as to when it might be more mainstream or ready for prime time?
That's a great question. I would guess, again, if the tech companies are willing to work with people who are educators. And I'm not just talking about past teachers. I'm talking about, you know, people who really understand how human brains work. I would guess that they could develop the prototypes in the next 4 or 5 years. And once they have them, then it's easier to make it less expensive and more equitable. Those things have to happen first. So what are we talking? Maybe 7 years, you know, maybe 8 until they become more integrated. I don't know. But I do think it's exciting. And I know that many of my colleagues don't, but I find it amazing. What an opportunity to teach people as they seemingly experience it. And all of us kind of feel that way, or some of the Disney rides when you go into outer space wouldn't still be Disney rides X years later, right? So what is it about that experience on a roller coaster in a rocket that makes you feel like you're really going to another dimension? If I can recreate that and use it in an educational environment, I think it's pure gold, but we are not there yet.
All right. Well, I think, is there anything else you want to add? This is like a really helpful check-in on this issue and, you know, that is an evolving one.
Well, do stay tuned. And again, I'm going to leave you with the same call to action. I mean, you reach these people at Meta, at Roblox. You know, people come to one meeting and then they hear what's going on in the science and then they bolt. But I have never from any of the biggies seen a real commitment to putting together what we know about how humans learn and what we can do with, you know, modern technology. And that's fine if you want to stick in the entertainment world, then just don't call yourself educational. But if you intend to call yourself educational, be real. And I promise you it will be better for you and better for the students and the educational process.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you so much for doing this, Kathy.
Yeah, take care.
This has been the EdSurge Podcast. Every week, we bring you conversations like these. If you like the show, please give us a rating or review on your favorite podcast app and tell a friend about the EdSurge Podcast. This week's episode was put together by me, Jeff Young. You're not going to find me in the metaverse, but I'm on X at JR Young and on the web at jeffyoung.net. I'd love to hear what you think about whether the metaverse is coming or whether it should come to education. Send me your thoughts in a voice memo or just type some words to jeff@edsurge.com, and I might use the comments in a future episode. Editing help this week by Rebecca Koenig, and the music is by Komaku. We'll be back next week with more on the future of learning. Thanks for listening.